In this episode, I talk with Amy Kimberlane. Amy works for a hospital system as a community dietitian and runs a personal blog from Miami, Florida. Amy understands the value of developing strategic partnerships and says connections, collaboration, and partnerships are essential for survival, whether the program you are running is within a larger business or out on your own. Amy discusses the importance of a community health needs assessment and monitoring the impact these programs have on the community over time. Listen for some examples of grassroots marketing, staying within her scope of practice, and the importance of defining your target market. All right. So thank you, Amy. It's Amy Kimberlane, correct?
Correct.
Awesome. And you are here to talk about a little bit more of the entrepreneurial side of the entrepreneurship, right? So the idea of being entrepreneurial and taking risk and being strategic and innovative, but not having the complete risk of being it all in for yourself with your own money. Is that accurate?
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So talk to me, tell me about your current position and how you got here and how it got here.
Yeah. So our position is a little, like my current position is titled wellness dietitian. And I think that alone kind of gives you an idea that really doesn't say much of what we're doing. A lot of times when you hear also that you're in community nutrition, I know I can only speak for myself, Caroline, and maybe you can chime in, but when I was in my internship, I guess my experience with community nutrition was more on the lines of, you know, again, maybe more of an underserved poverty level type situations. And I knew that was always where my heart was at because I've always been into community nutrition and making a difference, right? But I would say that it is so much more now that I see in my current role. I had the exposure of working at a vaccine site last year, right? Nothing that I thought as a wellness dietitian that I would be doing, but you can see that it really started to morph, right, into what our role was in how we're helping our actual community. And I know that sounds like a normal definition of what community nutrition is. But I know even in just these last 2 to 3 years, it really has evolved and changed. And I think that now as we're making that impact, it's shown me more of what maybe could be, right?
Yeah, I love that. I think community for so long, it sounds like what you're saying is sort of anything that's not clinical or not food service, but community, there's a lot, I feel like too, there's a lot of overlap and you're doing clinically based things, but you're doing it directly within the community.
Yeah. So, you know, I didn't give a great description. So yeah, let me go back. Sorry. No. You know, I started talking about it and I think I get so passionate about it because I think it really is how can you find your niche and being able to do what it is that you're doing and make that impact. And I always have been community. And I think it's just nice to see different areas within community and the role that a dietitian can play. So I work for a healthcare system here in Miami, Florida, and we have a unique opportunity in giving back to the community. And the idea is literal prevention. We don't want the community in our hospital. And so everything that we do from nutrition, we have exercise, we have mental health experts that have been added since the pandemic, and we work with doctors within our hospital setting. And what we do is free education to the community. So it can look like pre-pandemic, we would go out and we would do a lecture, 30 minutes to an hour, and whatever topic it was that was of request, right? It could have involved a cooking demo, not as often. That's been more now with pandemic because we're here in our kitchens and we can really just bring it to light. And so it's, again, going out into the community, teaching them on what their needs are. And so within that idea, we have about 8 hospital entities and we do community health needs assessments. And those community health needs assessments are the ability to see what really is needed at each area. We're here from the Keys all the way to Palm Beach in Florida. And so we're starting to even broaden and go a little further. So again, what impact do I make as the dietitian along with interdisciplinary as well? Sometimes we'll pair up with a doctor and do a talk. Just the other day, we were doing one on sports nutrition and talking about obviously nutrition as it relates to these guys running a marathon in January, but also the cardiologist was talking about these lovely little things on our arms and how to interpret the heart rate. So that is kind of, I guess, a quick snippet of my role as a wellness dietitian within community nutrition, again, within a hospital setting, but out in the community.
Awesome. And you answered when you started to talk about you were out in the classes doing what it is that they need. In my head, I wanted to ask you, how do you know what they need? But then you answered that with the community needs assessment. But can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I think, I know that's something that our students do in the community course, but not a lot of dietitians are typically involved with the community health needs assessment at your level, I would imagine. So how does that inform what programs you run?
It's a great question. And like I said, I would say it's only kind of come in these last couple of years, I've been more involved with it. But within each hospital entity, we gain together a group of people from the area. So whether it's an actual person that's attended a session that we've taught, whether it's a person that's seen a doctor at that hospital. So you have actual people coming in from the community. You have obviously some administrators from that particular entity. And then you have also doctors, nurses, and other staff members as well. So they come together and they have a forum and we ask questions and we actually work on actual surveys. So everybody's involved in the process in this discussion as to where we need to improve within the health of everyone involved. And so we had on the last one, I think the biggest impact for me was, you know, I think we know heart health is important, but you had a survivor, right? Just there speaking from the heart, literally, and saying what it was and how the difference was made. And it wasn't just in the moment from them being taken to the hospital, but it was the after. And it was from some of our classes that we were teaching. And so that helps to mold. You know, I just thought of it right now. It's interesting too, because we're going to be going down to the Keys after, you know, like in the next couple of weeks. And it's interesting because their big request right now, we just, gosh, how many years ago was it? We had a hurricane come through. It was in a recent acquisition of this particular hospital entity, and they literally, it was demolished, and it just reopened. And so it's so interesting because we're going to go back and just have kind of a meet and greet, if you will, with the neighborhood, because it's changed so much so. And so we're still, even though we had that community health needs assessment, right? They come up every so often, but we're still going back to the literal center of it all and finding out now, is it still the same? Because things have shifted and changed.
Oh, that's awesome. An awesome addition, because that idea of the meet and greet, I think so many times, you mentioned collaboration, you mentioned partners, you mentioned connecting. And oftentimes I don't think everyone draws the line between like relationship building. And you think about when you meet a new friend, when you meet a new partner, personal partner, it's the same for organizational partnerships, right?
You nail on the head. Absolutely. Whether it's through just an actual connection in the neighborhood of finding where they need to go see the dentist, or whether it's something as simple as we partner with a couple of the universities here as well. And they also have kind of clinic type settings, but we're still helping to do the education. So remember, that's that unique piece that we do have an opportunity to be able to, again, completely free, no charge. Let's really help everyone understand better what it is that they need to do. And then we may go back to that partner and say, hey, this is what we did, but this is still what's lacking and what's needed. And that happened. I keep referencing the vaccine, but it was where people weren't able to leave work and go get the vaccine. And so we brought the vaccine to them.
So it's really identifying problems and then being, you know, entrepreneurial and coming up with the solutions that's going to meet their need. How, you've mentioned a couple times that it's free. How does that happen? How do you continue to grow your team while the services are free?
It's part of, again, the not-for-profit status within the healthcare organization. And so there is obviously a little of a money involvement, right, in order to keep that status, if you will. But again, I think that when you look at it, our people above, the administrators and CEOs, et cetera, have seen such the impact that we make, as I said, in order to help keep the community from coming and being as sick as they are. So it's kind of, again, this involvement of, yes, we have a budget, it's minimal. And I think that that's also the challenge too, As you said, Caroline, because how do we keep doing what we're doing if we're acquiring new people? And so I would tell you my budget for food is pretty much zero. So can I go to the grocery store and be able to say, hey, we're doing this. I'll put that you are helping out with this particular program I am doing, and able to, again, have them see that you've helped us out. Technical.
And showing the win. So it sounds like you go back, your stakeholders, so you go back to the community and the client and know that they need some more cooking classes, but they don't want to hear the term cooking. They want meal prep classes, and that's a win for them. And then the grocery store, getting them a win by using their product, getting brand recognition. So it sounds a lot like making sure you're getting the wins spread around.
It's, you know, I think, again, it still comes back to partnership and connections, because I wouldn't say every time it's a success or, you know, again, a win. And I think that that's where you go back to the drawing board and have to really think outside the box. You know, I went to the dollar store just myself the other day, and I grabbed $10 worth of items, and I came back. It may be $1.25 now, but regardless, you know, you come back and you, the tuna says Bumblebee on the back, just not on the front. Right. You know, and so it's those little kind of tricks. And so again, I said the budget is basically zero. I mean, we probably have a little bit of dollars, but it's very minimal. And so how do you literally stretch? And that's also a nice way to show the community they too can stretch it, just like I just did. So that's been kind of, I would say, my recent shift, because I think now more than ever, you know, again, I'm at home, why not just use my own food, right? And again, it's not to say that I can't do that, but again, maybe I'm making more than I might need for that moment. And so knowing that, right, you have to be able to, you know, again, have a little back, I don't know what the right word is. I can't just always use my stuff, right? And so again, if I can still show, and my you know, employer's great about that, but again, it's still the challenge of not using too much either.
Yes, the disconnect also between the work that a dietitian does and how it comes mm-hmm. to be. So maybe, you know, when you were first starting out, you were just educating, and that's what you thought of in your silo. Not saying that's what you did, but a lot of folks right. do. But it sounds like over time, you've become much more aware of the whole system, everything that's involved, yeah. and you've been able to be entrepreneurial and work to know where the money, know where your salary is coming from, know where your budget's coming from, so that you can make more strategic changes. Is that
correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely correct. There's one, you know, I'll give an example that we're currently doing a diabetes prevention program. It's one of our bigger, I guess, programs, projects where we've gotten accreditation in the last couple of years. You mm-hmm. obtain the accreditation after you've met the criteria after a couple of years, and then also met the goals, if you will, that 5 to 7% weight loss, 150 minutes of exercise, attendance from each person. And so we could actually charge right now, Caroline. But again, our organization has said, no, this is still the community give back. And so we have it, even though we are accredited. So I think that that speaks again to the level of helping and giving back. But to your point, pandemic shifted, we're doing it virtually. So part of what shifted for me is, like you said, I am a dietitian, but guess what? My role in this is I am their lifestyle coach, because we're that short staffed, and I don't have access to just come in and be the dietitian on the nutrition lessons. So I'm teaching them about coping with triggers, stress management. I mean, so you can see, obviously you can think about how food relates to stress, right? And how it is all interconnected. But I would say that's been my challenge in these last few years. I'm in the middle of another cohort right now that I would say, you know, we thought we might meet in person, but with numbers currently on the rise again, you know, it's going to be delayed. And I think for some, that connection of in person, they've said, is what they want. But now, how do I still pivot, if you will? That word was popular in this time of pandemic, but literally, how do you shift to say, how can I still meet that person's needs? And so I've kind of partnered them each up with a buddy, because I can't do it all either. But regardless, the point of that is I am not just their dietitian. I am also now helping with stress management, meditation techniques, breathing techniques, all of the above, right? We bring in exercise demos, but I found myself the other day like showing them a few yoga poses, right? But it was really more about the breath. But regardless, you have to really be able to, yes, tie it back to nutrition, right? Because that's my passion, my love, but still find out what they're wanting. Not one day is the same within my job, but yet you have those little projects that we're working on that we know are important to the community. I just did a reel the other day. Imagine that.
Definitely staying trendy, right?
There you go.
How about, and you mentioned that you could charge with the accreditation. And that's interesting because we'll have to circle back to that because that's something that we're working on with our university as well. I have done it before for a supermarket. But when you say could charge, are you saying both direct, like out of pocket and insurance? Has there been a consideration for billing insurance, or is that, are you also a health plan? So it doesn't make sense.
You know, I'll be honest, because it has gotten to that point where we've just said no, I've not been on the other side of those conversations, Caroline, in all honesty. I just know that, again, because of our not-for-profit status, it would have to fall under a different pocket in order to be able, you know, if we did, say, do a reimbursement, if it was just Medicare, for example, versus going towards insurance companies, I think ultimately it would still have to be diverted to a different area in the hospital. And that's been the challenge, at least from what I understand, that we can't take in regardless of the income and where the sourcing is from.
Got it. And then so what,
but also again, Caroline, sorry to interrupt, but it really, it still comes back to the, I think for at least my director, her belief is we just wouldn't want to ever have it come back to say that we were, let's say if it was just Medicare, right? That's the easier route. We would never want for one person to be in the program and be charged and someone else not. And so that's why they went across the board to say no reimbursement for now.
And so with that then too, how are you, what do you personally show, or what do you need to provide and work with your boss to show that this is successful? And so those donors, that funding keeps coming your way.
Yeah. I mean, again, I can only speak back to the community health needs assessment. And so we run the reports, whether it's showing, so we have goals that we try and meet. And I say goals, air quote, just because I think it's been a little bit more flexible with pandemic and knowing the current situation. One of the other areas that our department offers are free screenings to the community. So as you can imagine, with nothing being in person, we're still not allowed in person. We just started going to outdoor exercise and that may be pulled back as well. But you know, when you think about screenings, we've had numbers that in theory we're supposed to meet, but we're not meeting them. So we're trying to shift and think out how can we still maybe obtain some of that data from people. And so in a situation like diabetes prevention, we have them send in their data to us. So maybe it's just on an honor type system. So we work based on that as a way to show back to the community how we're making an impact, whether it's through just the exercise numbers, or again, if I'm running a report through DPP to show them the weight loss. But I've also started to do one with just goals that they've been meeting, because I have a couple of participants that aren't losing, but they're making and meeting goal.
I keep going back to the fee structure, just because I think a lot of this, because this is the entrepreneurial class and we need to touch on some of the finance and marketing pieces. Do you know, you mentioned that, you know, at the highest level, this is a priority. So money gets budgeted for it. Is it a grant funded program? Is it a line item? Like, and I'm trying to get at, like, it sounds like you have long-term projects and everyone sees the long-term investment, which is what lifestyle wellness needs to be. So do you feel like that's the case? It's not like every year you're having to justify, you have the money, the program's here, unless something major were to happen.
I would say that would be the case. And then the other thing that we just recently discussed, Caroline, because I think it's what you're describing is accurate, in how do you just keep it running, right? Because like I said, it is just me, myself, and I for my cohort. Whereas again, we used to have a pattern where we would bring in more of the exercise, we would bring in more of, right? So it's been downsized, if you will, in that regard. And so again, the discussion is we also have amongst our team a couple that have gone to the master type training. And so what you can do on those levels is those people can actually then train others to be lifestyle coaches. And so we just recently did one amongst just our staff. But again, that allows us to have a few more lifestyle coaches. So again, maybe I have backup now, right? But the idea behind that one is to now be able to bring in people from afar, whether it's still virtual or they come in person. We can train those people, they can go back to their community, and now they can do the program as well. And I think that's the next step for us, to be honest, Caroline, because again, I think you still need to show how can I still maybe fund this program, but keep it actually moving forward. And so that's the idea being discussed right now.
And when you were talking about that, like going back to their community, training them and going back to their community, I believe you're talking about like your staff within the wellness plan or your hospital. Or is it community members too?
We train, it can be anybody, right? That okay. could be a lifestyle awesome. Coach. You just have to be trained. So we now have more in ours, like that kind of, I guess you could say domino effect within our own my other coworkers. But again, now the idea is to bring in people, let's say from Montana, that want to be trained and start a diabetes prevention program in their state. So we would have that ability because we have what are called master trainers, Caroline, and it's been done through the CDC, right? And their training. And they can now administer that training so everyone can be a lifestyle coach. And again, that's where we think it's also kind of, even though it's not a give back in our community, it's in other communities. And I think that that's been of benefit for our stakeholders as well to see that we're making a ripple effect and it's not just here anymore.
Yeah, and I'm seeing a lot of research. It's not something new, but I think it's resurfacing maybe of that idea of community health workers. So is that something that you have done or considered to give back to your community to empower, I hate to say empower, but the folks who may have come to your classes now teach them to be lifestyle coaches to continue that on? How are you doing that?
Yeah, we haven't decided to do it in that manner yet, but I think again, it's what you're describing. I mean, what better method to show the impact that a program made for somebody to be able to now kind of help run that program themselves. I think it takes a lot of time and effort. So we're looking for any candidates. We're going to put the feelers out and I'll get back to you.
Awesome. Keep me posted on that one. Yes. And I know you mentioned marketing. Can you talk to me a little bit about your role in marketing, how you learned about marketing?
I think we have a marketing team within our current, my employer. And I think that, again, a lot of times it's still, how do you see a vision? I don't know that ours, again, draws in the dollars. So for us, marketing is a little bit more tough. So in the pandemic time, they've been now starting to advertise on Facebook for us and on Instagram, where that never happened before. We would just have something on the, our internet page, et cetera, our website. But I would say, I think that that's where you have to start to get a little bit where you think outside the box. And so I created an Instagram just for kind of, it's not just, but it's now starting to advertise some of my programs that I have. And then if you I think it's what you're describing, that idea of connection. And so if I'm working with someone, I'm tagging them and then they're tagging and moving it through in their story. And I think that that's how, one, people understand what's going on. And then two, maybe you get more of that effect where people now are spreading the message of what we're doing. Because I would be honest in telling you, Caroline, we are probably, our department, it's so funny because we have also within our hospital division, we have what's called Wellness Advantage, and they also help just the employees. So it's kind of interesting because a lot of people don't know what we do because we're normally for the outfacing community, not our community of employees. So it's funny because our joke in our department is we're the most underrepresented, I'm not even wording it right, but we're the most undervalued department because people don't even know what we do. So to the marketing point, it's tough because I've taken it upon myself to be able to just, whether I'm advertising it on my social feeds, or again, now starting to try and work with other people to be able to, again, start to spread the message. Our marketing team is great in the sense that they're always thinking outside the box. Like I said, the real, they actually just started a TikTok. I mean, cool for them, right? So we give them content. But again, with the underlying thought that you can at least tie back into our programs that we're doing.
So you have, you really are straddling entrepreneur of the idea, like you have the marketing department, but your program, just because and I'm kind of explaining this too, maybe to those listening, that just because there's a marketing department where you work doesn't mean they have resources allocated to your program.
You've got it exactly correct. And I think that that's sometimes our struggle to let people know what it is that we're doing. And so I recently wrote like a piece for the blog, and what I was trying to have them do was to advertise my program. They didn't post the blog within time. So you can see it's kind of, again, those moving pieces where you are trying to work on a timeline, a deadline with their deadlines, because guess what? Right now it has been for the most part, they're they're all about the virus right now, right? And that's a push out message. We just recently had to restart saying how many numbers are in our hospital setting, right? So you can imagine my reel, probably not important. And that's understood. But yes, like you said, it's still, how do I start to, again, we just sent out, they create nice flyers for us with all of our programs. But what we started doing is I tailor and show the top five classes that I think my one partner or this partner would like. And that's what we've been sending out. Because if you looked at our classes for the week, Caroline, we have, I mean, I'm probably not even going to quote it right, but we have at least 100 exercise classes and we have at least 25 nutrition classes a week. So can you imagine, not everybody wants all of those. And if you right. looked at something like that, that can seem overwhelming. So we're trying to be strategic and saying this partner would like this one, and this one, let's send them those codes only so that then they can advertise to their employees, et cetera.
That going back to the conversation we had about partnerships and relationships, just like when you hear something, you hear about a sale or something in your personal life, you go to a specific friend.
Exactly.
How about for you personally, what skills do you need? What skills have you developed? What skills do you feel you did possess? I'm throwing a lot of questions at you, which is not MI appropriate.
Gosh. So I've been in the field of nutrition, for 20 plus years. And over that time, and then just in my current position, I've always been in community nutrition, but I would say that I personally have been more on the food realm. I love being in the kitchen. And so I've started to, again, really, like I said, put it in motion with, I'm telling them to eat their five a day. I'm giving them more now, kind of, again, maybe an actual recipe. So I've shifted that way where I don't know that people don't know sometimes the things that we think they need to know. But like I said, for me, that's been part of the fun of how do I change it up? Because, you know, everybody likes one of the cooking shows online, right? Mm-hmm. Can I bring them into my kitchen and really start to show them some of those things? For me, it's been public speaking. And whether or not that during my internship days, right? And then even in my first few years of work, I probably didn't utilize it that much. But we used to obviously do presentations in person. And yes, we might have a PowerPoint behind us. But I'll be honest, if you ever see one of my PowerPoints, Caroline, it's a picture. And so I used to just always talk, right? And just, again, that would help to remind me point A, B, C, right? But now with Zoom, I think it's been a little bit of an interesting thing because I actually have some notes sometimes that I'm looking at. So I know when I do go back in person, I'm going to have to be brushing up on my techniques to make sure it's really all here. Not to say that I don't have it, but I'll give the example. I do speak Spanish, and I've in my Spanish lectures gotten a little too reliant on my notes. And I'll be honest, it's easier for me just to not look at them and talk on the fly than it is to look at the notes. But some of the words, I'll be honest, I still probably don't know how to say vaccine in Spanish. I should by now. but vacuna, I know how. But jokes aside, you just sometimes that's that ability to listen, if I'm preparing for this and I'm doing the presentation, but yet I also have to have all the food prep. So you just really have to be ready. And so I think my ready in both areas, not just the education part of the nutrition, but then also my actual presentation skills.
And how about, you said that made me think about too, then the business side, do you see parallels in your ability to communicate to your clients that you can communicate internally to get your programs off the ground?
So I think that, like I said, I think it still just comes back to sometimes the money part of it, Caroline. And I think, again, it's, you know, I know for us as a department, we still, and even myself, right, just in thinking outside the box of how can I possibly get, like you said, another grant, or can I now, you know, the one that we just recently got funded for is with one of the organizations that does the cooking classes here in Miami. It's actually in Broward County, so in Fort Lauderdale, one of the main universities. And we did it virtually for an 8-week cooking series with them. And so and that's why I referenced it. The grocery store did provide cards so that they were able to go out and get the food. But that was through a grant that we applied for. And so I think that's what we're still trying to work on ourselves in order to, like you said, really start to show that, hey, I want to do this program and this is how I'm going to get it done. It's been part challenge, but part fun too, to think outside the box.
So I just have a couple more questions. And one of them I wanted to ask anyway, but then I forgot that you are bilingual. And so this, that may be part of your answer to this question, but it may be something different. Can you talk about how cultural competence and cultural humility play a role in your work?
Gosh, where do I begin? That's a, you know, Miami is such a melting pot of so many different backgrounds. And it's been over the years, I would say in my first job, I did not speak great Spanish. And so it was kind of like a pointing game, and then it evolved. And obviously I am bilingual. I should, you know, own it, even though I don't have all the nutrition vocabulary sometimes, but, you know, joking aside, it's coming back to something as simple as here in Miami, they do make a type of coffee, like the espresso. And I remember I was in class one day and I was talking about added sugar. And I'm laughing, Caroline, because I mean, talk about humility. Like, he took me from here, this gentleman, down to here. And it wasn't that I didn't know. And it wasn't that I didn't try to understand how it was made. I thought I had looked it up. And I knew that in order to make that, they use the sugar along with the coffee, and they beat it basically to make a foam. And I just didn't realize how much was in it, right? And that was what our discussion was, not so much then that you add it to the milk and you put even more sugar in. I was like, you need to know how much you started with. But he basically told me that he would not ever make the coffee without sugar. And that wasn't what our message was, right? So to answer your question, I am always completely in the, even if I have an idea of what I think to be how something is made, I always ask them. The other thing that I have found, this is just one other example, I guess, and maybe the examples help me to say and speak what I'm thinking of, is that the words in Spanish, calabaza, which is squash, it means all squashes. And I think as a dietitian, you have winter squash and you have summer squash in my head, right? Mm-hmm. But for someone speaking Spanish, calabaza is squash. So whether or not you want to call it green squash or whether you want to call it orange squash, so zucchini versus pumpkin, right? I started showing pictures, mm-hmm. because I didn't want someone to not understand what I was saying. And I think that's where sometimes, maybe that's why my PowerPoints are only pictures. Mm-hmm. But I mean, joking aside, I think that's, for me, finding out how a recipe is made, tell me a little bit about it so that I have that understanding from them before I just jump right in. And that's been for me, because there are so many different cultures here, again, whether it's an empanada that's made from this one country this way, or whether it is, they were looking at one of the sweetened beverages for the holidays this year. And there's one I had never heard of, but interesting, I asked amongst my friends that are of that nationality and background, they also don't drink it either. And so you can see, again, it's kind of like, that was our marketing taking a miss, and I was helping them out. Let's not do that one.
Yes.
But, you know, jokes aside, it, like I keep saying, it really is, for me, the part of being humble is talking with a patient, one, seeing what it is that is their priority. You know, that gentleman with the sugar and the coffee, that wasn't his priority, but he was willing to change other things. And so that's meeting the person where they're at. And I explained and apologized afterwards that that's not where I was coming from. But he, you know, again, I think that was like almost 10 years ago. That really taught me moving forward, really to ask the questions up front, find out what they want, what they need. And then if there's ever a doubt, simply ask them before jumping to a conclusion.
The that idea of being open, being curious.
Yeah.
And not, I think, do you personally, the more that I learn, and you know, when we become Academy spokesperson, they ask you your expert areas. I find expert means asking more questions and realizing there's more you don't know, which it sounds like what you're saying.
I list that as part of one of my expert areas, if you will, because I can speak the language. But I think that alone allows for people to understand that you'd be surprised at how many are so appreciative that you can speak to them in their language. And again, if ever there's a word they don't understand or something, believe me, my jokes don't go over in Spanish ever. they're like too literal. So I don't try anymore. I remember one time I was teaching in a class on diabetes, and the nurse walked in and she's like, that wasn't funny. And I was like, never, you know, I'll just stop. but you know, I think like that's where, like I said, they're still appreciative that you're making an effort to talk to them. And this is just one more example, Caroline. I worked in a center that was just for diabetes in my previous position. But I remember a person came in, they had cancer. And I feel bad because that is not my area of expertise. But the lady looked at me and she said, but you speak Spanish. And I was like, oh gosh, like that's, you know, humbling, because she wanted to be heard and she wanted to have information given to her that she could understand. And I guess at the other facility, she said no one did speak Spanish. And that wasn't the case. And we found the right people. Because I honestly wanted her to be able to have someone in the specialty speak to her to answer all her questions. Not that I can't look up medications and I couldn't have helped her, and I did, but also keep in mind, that's a money thing. And this person's mm-hmm. coming in to pay her copay. And I could not take it. I was like, let's find you the right person. Mm-hmm.
That is awesome. And so important, because if no matter how much you know and how expert you are in an area, if the person isn't able or willing to listen or hear,
yeah,
how good is your knowledge?
Yeah. I mean, she was super appreciative afterwards, but you know, I think in the moment her expressing that she couldn't find anyone was that, again, connector for me to say, no, I'm sure that there is, let's make this right. So again, all about connections, Caroline, today.
Yes. I think that's what we're going to summarize this one as, of like connections, partnerships, and being also, I would say you're open and you're looking for those connections. You're curious about, you know, what, realizing that you aren't the only one that has that answer.
Yeah. And again, also with, you know, I alluded to it earlier, but within our different entities and divisions, there's so many different needs. And that if you think the Keys have the same needs as Palm Beach, forget it. Completely different demographics. And it's just interesting to be able to meet the needs for each one in a different way as well. So that's why when you go back into, you know, the one that I just found recently that we're starting to target, because we did open up a new facility in this area, they have an actual cooking place where we can go. And that's the only one in this area of town. So of course I'm making that connection to say, hey, can we partner together? And so far we put the feelers out and we'll see, but I think it looks promising because they can do the cooking class and I'm just going to come in for a few minutes to talk and teach. Mm-hmm. Or at least use their facility, because we don't have a kitchen of our own. So.
Yeah. So connections to grow your client base, to do your marketing, to partner when you know your strengths and your weaknesses,
yeah,
using other persons. So anything else in terms of being strategic, marketing yourself, making connections that you feel, that you want to get across or talk more about?
Not off the top of my head, Caroline. I mean, I think, again, what's really changed and evolved a lot more so in this last year and a half or so has been social media. And while I may not be as great at it, because, again, we rely within my hospital entity, but I know on my personal side, on the side, I started a blog, and I'm not saying that that's ever going to take off. Maybe it will, but I do it in my spare time because it is something that I enjoy and love. And I would say on that, right, you're able to, again, one, yes, still do some of the same areas. And if that starts to, I was just watching one of the kind of like a webinar on learning how to make your blog business grow, right? And it's the same idea within what we were just talking about with work. But here now, if I were to go off and do personal, you know, private practice, because you have to have those different pockets of income in order to be able to, I would say, thrive, because I don't know that I could do one-on-one counseling all the time, right? And so again, maybe you have certain days of the week that you are working on that. So there's set income coming in, and then other days, maybe I do end up getting some sponsorships, and now I can start to market those products that I'm doing and working into my recipes or whatever. And I'm working on getting ads on my website. So right now there are none, right? So that I think is for me, again, social media, I think is where now I'll start to, again, on a personal side, start to kind of look more into how can I make it where something could be of profit for me.
And I know I was starting to wrap up, and I still am, but you mentioned about the multiple streams of income and that you don't know that you could just do one-on-one or, you know, how to monetize your blog. And I think sometimes I've had students say, well, I don't want to have to do a side hustle. I shouldn't have to do all these things. My thinking is, you earlier, you were talking about how your hospital has grants. You still go after grants. You work for partners. They get money. So do you agree that companies also have multiple streams of income? You just don't always see it as the dietitian.
correct. And I think that that's keeping that open mind in order to, it's kind of like the saying, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Mm-hmm. And I do believe it is just another way to, yes, yeah, some will be more of, you know, monetary value in the sense of bringing more in for you, but that allows you then to do maybe some of the other things that you still want to do, but just not, I mean, I also do food photography. I would say I am not nearly as good as others that are out there, but when you see some of my photos, maybe they might think, hey, could I use that even as another source of income? It might be. And then I just recently started packaging up and starting doing like kind of like cheese boards,
awesome,
dessert boards and things like that. So again, I think my head's all over the place as to where could I draw another income, but finding the right kind of, I guess, touch to still keep what I want to do and keep to my message of, you know, again, looking at keeping it kind of nutritious and not just all desserts either.
Right. You know, I love hearing about your blog, your food photography, your cheese boards. If I don't think we could ship cheese to Pennsylvania, but if the students or anyone listening wants to learn more about you or get into touch with you, where should we direct them?
All right. My website is amysnutritionkitchen.com. And my email would be amy@amysnutritionkitchen.com.
Awesome. Anything else that you want to say before we sign off?
No, again, thank you so much. I wish I was on the other end and could see the students, but I can't wait to hear some of the feedback and just some of the other discussions that you'll be having as well. So again, thank you for having me, Caroline.
Great. Thank you so much. And I will be in touch.